Tomas, we are back, my friend. You know what that means. Time for a little bit more Tasty Live with Confirm and Send. But before we do, would you like to take a quick look at the market? Sure you do. Even the S&P is down 4, trading 5209. Sazonov's hanging out here for the last, well, it feels like eternity, but really only the last 3 days or so. NASDAQ down 6 and change. Russell up a dollar. And the Dow down 77. Everything was a lot softer when I came in this morning. We've actually rallied a little bit after jobless claims. Volatility unchanged at 13.95. Bonds 116.05. We're in the 115 handle where Sadnov scoopied. Now they're 116.05. Bitcoin hanging out at 61,500 or so. I'm talking about the cash. That's a BTC /USD. The futures are a couple of dollars higher. Oil up 68 cents. 79.67, higher end of its most recent 3 or 4 or 5 day range here, but on the low end over the last month or so. Gold up $10 and change. Silver with the larger percentage move up 53, almost 54 cents. Net gas up 1.5 cents. Softs are a little bit mixed. Wheat is the one that's green, up by about 10, trading 6.44 and change. We had a couple of earnings. The big mover to the downside, Airbnb, down around $13 or $14. You had Roblox down around $9, ARM down around $10, and Hood up a dollar. That's all I got, Saz.
Our boy Dylan Radigan was very, very adamant about silver yesterday, and I've never heard Dylan...
Silver bull, right?
Silver bull.
Mm-hmm.
Very bullish. I'm like, what's wrong with you? I go, who got the silver bug in you?
Mm-hmm.
And... I don't know.
Some people just have a gift. He's got the gift.
I would say he doesn't have the gift, but he was very bullish in silver. Confirm and send. These are emails that came into us yesterday, and we got a ton of them. It is, what is today? Thursday, May 9th, right?
You are 100% correct, as usual.
Yeah, Thursday, May 9th. Can you explain your approach to scalping? Oof, haven't got a scalping question in a while. Can you explain your approach to scalping, and would you ever say your approach offers a higher success rate than other approaches?
I mean, I mean, you're testing.
I mean, you just saw me, you know.
I did just see you scalpy
the bottom in bonds.
Yes, yes, and sell them out nice.
Yeah, that's the only scalp I made today so far.
Yeah, I mean, scalping futures is a 50-50 game, and I think the way to be successful with it is you trade small relative to your account size. That would be, I think, your approach too. I mean, is scalping for you is obviously something that you want to make money with, because everything you do, you want to make money with. Why take the risk if you don't want to make money? But it's not, it pales in comparison to some of the amount of buying power you use in other positions. So but the problem with futures are that most people don't go to the micros, they go to the minis, which are 500 shares per SPY, if you're looking at the ES, instead of 100 shares, where they probably should be. I think size, scalping small size is the key.
So I've been scalping for my entire life.
You have been.
I mean, literally.
Really do love it.
I have been buying and selling stuff since my first day on the trading floor, which is 40 some odd years ago, to like this morning,
mm-hmm.
buying some bonds and selling them out. Like, that is what I love more than anything in this business.
Yep.
I mean, it's not how I ultimately make. I obviously make more money on my position trades than my scalps,
mm-hmm.
but I love scalping.
Yep.
There are so many, you know, I've watched people throughout. I've watched hundreds of thousands of people, literally hundreds of thousands of people for many, many, many years on the retail side and also on the professional side. And if anybody tries to tell you that they have an approach, or they have, you know, they know something better than somebody else. A system. It doesn't. There's no such thing exists. Here's my advice for scalping. One, like Tony said, you always want to stay small because you never want to be forced out of your position. Number two, don't overthink scalping. Just, you know, like, you know, I bought bonds.
Got a hunch. Don't bet a bunch.
I bought bonds this morning. I sold them out as soon as they went my way. I don't even care. I will not look at that. The bonds go up 2 points from here, I won't care. Right. It won't have any impact on me. Right. If scalping, if you look back at the trade and it has an impact on you, you can't do it. Okay. The other thing is, don't get full of yourself when you get hot, because you'll have stretches where you're really hot, And then you'll have stretches where you're ice cold. So don't read too much into it. I do like the research that we came up with years ago, which essentially says that we're looking, the best scalping range is inside of a 1/2 to 1.5 standard deviation move, which means if you take the expected move on the platform and you take half of what the expected move is and then 2.5 times what the expected move is on a daily basis, if we're staying in that range in a day, that's really where you want to be. We're there already today.
Scalping is the best place to watch genius fail.
Scalping is also the best engagement tool ever. And it gets you, in the liquid products, it gets your eyes to focus on the S&Ps and bonds. Like, we talk about bonds a lot, but if you've never scalped them, it doesn't mean anything. Right. If you've never traded futures, you know, like, it doesn't mean as much. But most people scalp with futures. It's just easier. It's cheaper. And no hero stuff.
Felt the euphoria of just being able to win and make money, and then agony of defeat.
The winning part is really good. Let me tell you something. Selling puts on an earnings trade and losing money on that is 100 times worse than any scalp you're ever going to make.
Fair.
Because you have no control over it all.
That's fair.
The scalps, fair. You own that. You have total control. Yeah. I would rather do 1,000 scalps than one crappy earnings trade.
That's fair. I give you that too.
Do I think we offer a higher success rate? No, of course not. But I mean, I think through experience, you know, you can be better than others. I mean, I better be better than others. You know, I've been doing it long enough. If I didn't think I was better than, like, Tony,
right?
I would kill myself. But he thinks he's better than me, so it doesn't matter. Let's go next slide. Mm-hmm. We both know we're better than Scott. That's all that matters. On expiration day,
that is fair.
On expiration day, I will occasionally close a call credit spread by buying back the short leg for a nickel. Immediately after the fill, I'll then put my long leg up for sale. Around 25% of the time, someone will actually buy these from me. Yesterday, some chump bought 20 far out of the money NDX calls from me at 3:54 Eastern time, 6 minutes before the close. Who or why would someone pay $100 for 20 calls, those are 20 at a nickel, that are going to expire out of the money in 6 minutes?
It could have been for a part of a spread book, like, you know, they needed that side for a spread, or really, I think it really just comes down to reducing their own risk.
Yeah, of course. The reason somebody bought those from you is they waited all day. Mm-hmm. And just before the close, they have a requirement. They're either working at a prop firm, mm-hmm. or they have a, remember, NDX is a crazy expensive product, right? It's like, how much is the NDX right now? 17,000?
Something like that.
What is the NDX? I can't even remember. 18,000. Mm-hmm. See, it's $18,000 index, okay? If somebody buys out of the money calls from you for a nickel, they probably save themselves overnight, you know, maybe hundreds of dollars. They paid you $100, they probably save $1,000 in capital that they have to put up. Mm-hmm. Thousands of dollars. So it's for risk purposes. They might have a requirement that they can't be naked, so they buy it for risk purposes, or they have a requirement that they have to get their capital usage to make them more capital efficient, mm-hmm. in line. They gave up the $100 just because that was the cheapest, you know, that was the closest or cheapest option they could find for a nickel. That's all it is. They'll go, okay, what can I buy?
You're right. It is, quote unquote, the closest thing to free money you're going to find if you get lucky enough to do that, but you tie up that buying power for that amount of time.
But you would have never sold those because if you're not long, like, you were long though, so you sold out your longs, but you would have never sold 20 naked, because on an $18,000 index, to sell 20 naked, you know, you'd have to put up whatever it is, you know, a few million dollars.
Right.
So let's go to the next slide. In low implied volatility, is the biggest risk always to the downside? In low implied volatility.
When the volatility is low, the risk is really about larger movement. We've shown from our research, you have the largest movement either up or down. I mean, when I say it's more down than up, I don't know. These days, I don't think after the kind of market we've had over the last 10 years or so, I could say that anymore.
In low implied volatility, is the biggest risk always to the downside? You know, I mean, you can never say always, but I would say that 97%+ of the time, in low implied volatility, the biggest risk is always the downside. we're talking about low implied S&P volatility, mm-hmm. and the biggest risk at that point historically is to the downside of the market. Yes.
But you can't play for that move because look at what's happened.
You cannot play for that move, but that is the correct. I would give that grade a yes. That is the correct answer, but it's unactionable. Yeah, I'll go with that. It's not, you can't trade it, but the answer is it is not doable. It's not tradable. It's unactionable, but the answer is correct.
You're going to visit your mom this weekend. I'm going to let it go. Go ahead. Next one.
How can I calculate the buying power requirement when the implied volatility changes? For example, if I have a 10 delta option that requires $500 buying power when the VIX is 20, what would the buying power be if there's a crash and the VIX goes to 80? Trick question.
Yeah, I don't know the formula.
The answer is it will be the same.
I was going to say it wouldn't change. It's going to be
so,
but it's going to change because you're going to be, your P&L is going to go down because you're closer
different.
To the money.
That's different. What's different, we can't talk about the, assuming that the price stays the same, because there's no mention here that price is going to drop or anything like that.
And they're not mentioning what product they're in either.
Okay. Assuming it's a listed option, mm-hmm. and assuming the price doesn't change, just because implied volatility, the VIX goes from 20 to 80, in the world of listed options, the buying power requirement does not change. This is an old system. This is the one we're required to use by the regulators. Mm-hmm. The buying power does not change. If you had, for example, a futures option, they use a different margining system called SPAN. In the case of the VIX going from 20 to 80, the buying power requirement would go dramatically higher because mm-hmm. that is based on duration and it's based on volatility is one of the inputs. Right. Mm-hmm. However, in the world of listed options, anything that's not a futures option, nothing changes.
Very nice.
Let's go to the next slide. I know certain commodities like gold have a weak correlation with the S&P 500, but what about their respective implied volatilities? Are those uncorrelated as well?
Yeah, they're going to be completely independent of each other and subject to just each other's movement.
For the most part,
gold correlation is 0.17.
Yeah,
it's nothing.
No, we're talking about the correlation of implied volatilities.
Understood, but it's correlation to SPY, and then if it's correlation, I'm trying to work backwards. If it's correlation to SPY is uncorrelated, then it can go higher or lower. Volatility will go higher or lower. Yeah.
So, certain commodities like gold have a weak correlation with SPY. That's accurate. Their respective implied volatilities. Those are generally uncorrelated or non-correlated as well. There are situations, and like when implied volatility in the markets, goes up something to like, let's just call it like 70 or 80%, whatever, some ridiculously high number, everything gets inflated. But gold is, I mean, for the most part, let's call it 98% of the time, those are non-correlated. Let's go to the next slide.
Next slide we go.
And the last one. What percentage of net link is appropriate to use on zero DTE trades?
I mean, we keep it pretty tight. I mean, with the iron condors that we do, they only use $15 to $2,000 worth of buying power or less. So we keep it pretty tight. So I would try to use as little as possible on zero day. You do a $20 white iron condor, you collect $4 using $1,600 in buying power. That's relatively inexpensive when strangles we use $5,000.
One of the keys to success in zero DT trades is keeping your trades small. What percentage of net lick was appropriate to use? Well, it really depends on account size. Let's put it this way. Never more than 10 to 15% regardless of account size. And in most cases, for us, it's in the super low single digits. Like we are 0.5. We're actually below that. We're 0.2. So 0.2 to, let's say, 2% would be an absolute max for us, or 0.2 to 1% would be a max for us. for other people, I think with smaller accounts, I would say, you know, 0.5 to 5%. And if you have a small account, like a Tasty Bites account, never more than 10 to 15% absolute max.
Let's take a quick 90-second break and come back. You know what we got coming up next? Trades for the research team. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.